Fundraisers like you are working to supply your cause with the resources it needs to make the world a better place. But donor expectations and technology seems to keep changing. At Pursuant, we want to bring you conversations that put leaders like you at the top of your fundraising game. Welcome to the Go Beyond Fundraising Podcast. The Great Resignation has shed light on the timeless reality that effective organizations require empowered people. Good leaders are able to recognize their direct reports' unique talents and passions and harness that potential to grow both the employee and the organization. But how is this actually accomplished? In this episode, our Executive Vice President, Becca Segovia, shares how she grew into the effective leader she is today, as well as some key resources and frameworks you can leverage to become the leader you want to be. So Becca, thank you so much for taking some time to sit down and just have a conversation that's maybe a little bit more casual about leadership and growth and being a good organizational and team leader. I know that there are a lot of nonprofit and fundraising leaders that are probably in, you know, many different stages of their career, but they're probably going to be facing a leadership role at some point if they stay in their career long enough. So I just wanted to get some of your story about how you became the effective leader that you are and see where that conversation takes us.
Well, thank you, Leah. It is so fun to be here on the podcast, and hopefully some of my past learnings will help future leaders. I think we all are leaders, you know, we show up every day, we have a job to do, and I think we all have the desire to make a difference, whether it's a difference in the world or a difference in whatever job I'm in, my family, my friend group. And so, you know, how we show up every day matters. And so I'm excited to talk about what organizational leadership and key attributes of leaders and what that looks like.
So let's just get right into your background as a leader. We've worked together for around 5 years of the 7 years that I've been with Pursuant. And one of the things that really stood out to me when we first began working together was you have a key ability to recognize when someone is, well, how you phrase it, as being on the right seat on the bus and also on the wrong seat of the bus. So can you expand that a little bit? And maybe we can get there by first backing up and looking at your history and how you got to that point.
So I'll give a little bit of background of how I got to Pursuant. I've been at Pursuant for 12 years now. Can't believe it. I've had the opportunity, I think, to wear almost every seat that we have on our bus. And I think it's just because of how I'm wired. Prior to joining Pursuant, I spent some time in the financial banking space. Believe it or not, that was kind of my first career out of college. And I really enjoyed that. But I always found myself kind of gravitating towards leadership and organization and trying to understand how things work and how to make things better. Left the financial industry and moved into nonprofit, honestly, through just a series of events. I knew that I wasn't happy selling what I was selling at the time, which happened to be financing, and wanted to do something that I felt had a more integral impact one-to-one. And so I moved into the nonprofit space and worked for a nonprofit in Atlanta for many years. And through that, I had a couple of leaders there that really saw me and saw my gift. My gifting and the way that I was wired. It really encouraged me to lean into those things. We also did a lot of leadership and team building during that time with names that we probably all recognize. We read, you know, the Patrick Lencioni books at the time, Five Dysfunctions of a Team and Three Signs of a Miserable Job or two that had deep impact on me then. We also were reading Jim Collins' Good to Great and specifically Good to Great in the social sector. And what does that really look like? And so that really started to unlock new thinking in my brain. And so I moved into out of nonprofit and into some consulting work and technology work with Convio, where I got to lead a vertical there and then landed at Pursuant. Through my tenure, as I said, I've gotten an opportunity really to kind of see all sides of our organization. What does it look like to build a services organization and ensure that we are serving our clients well and understanding their overarching strategies as an organization, and then how whatever role they've hired us to do plays a part into that. And then marketing and now technology with Giving DNA. And one of the themes or things that is true about all those roles and all the different interactions that I've been able to have is people And as I got to really spend time getting to know myself and how I'm wired, I've probably taken every personality test out there. So I'm an ENTJ, if you're on Myers-Briggs, DIS profile, I'm an ID, sometimes a DI, depends on if I'm stressed or not. In Enneagram, I'm a 3 with a 2 wing. Like there's all kinds of tools out there that you can do to get to know yourself. But what I realized is I have a unique gifting to be able to see the potential in others and draw that out. And so the leadership stand that I've worn for quite some time now is, what does it look like to see those gifts in others and then maximize their talents, whether it's their talents here at Pursuant or their talents with the organization that they happen to serve. And so one of my favorite things that I get to do here at Pursuant is to come alongside executives through lots of different clients we have the opportunity to partner with and help them realize goals that they didn't really think were possible, whether it was a fundraising goal or a lead gen goal of some sort, or really staffing, like, do I have the right people in the right seats on the bus, to the question that you asked earlier. And so I have a couple of frameworks that I've used to help leaders kind of unpack that. You know, are they in the right fit role for them? Do they have clear objectives that they're marching towards? And are they excited about them? Do they get energy from that? And so those are things that we kind of ask ourselves as we're sitting in our day-to-day and saying, okay, am I really getting oxygen here? Am I getting energy from the things that I'm being asked to do? And if not, why not? And what are the things that actually bring the best out of me? And what are the things that actually drain me? And if you can get clear on those things, then you can start getting clear on who and how you need to show up as a leader and where you need to ask for help, which a lot of good leaders do. They ask for help. They know exactly what they're wired to do. They try to stay in that zone and then support around them the things that may not be the things that they are best in the world at. And it's okay. We're not wired to be able to do all the things. We're created to do some very specific things. And so what are they? So that's a little bit about how I got to where I am, my passion around organizational leadership and leaders themselves.
I think for some people, there might be some baggage around the word leader, some associations around that, that may be some positive and some negative. But a word that comes to mind when I think about you is the word coach. And so when we reframe leadership as coaching, it brings up a whole positive set of associations of someone who's able to see the potential in someone and nourish it and bring it out in a really powerful way. And so I think about that word when I think about you. And so I would just love to know more about what drives you to lead the way that you do.
I mean, honestly, I think it's just the way that I'm wired, but there are some things that you can learn. There's a great book, The Ideal Team Player. Again, it's a Lynchiani book, but it's a great one. And he talks about humble, hungry, smart. And so those are key attributes of team players. And so I think leading with humility is really important. Being able to see and know the people on your team and drawing out, you know, those things that we were talking about that they're uniquely wired for. And I have a framework of questions that I typically use, both in annual performance reviews, but really in a continuous feedback loop with those that are on my team. And honestly, those sometimes that aren't on my team when I'm working with other organizations or, you know, just inside Pursuant. So the framework is this. First of all, I want to know what the person, the individual, or the team is celebrating. Where are they owning their successes? What's actually happening? And how does that map into the overarching goals of the organization or the team, right? Because it's good to celebrate, but we want to celebrate the professional wins, right? That are happening, that we're all marching towards. There's also a part of that of just celebrating the personal wins. Like, what are the things that you are trying to do personally in your life that you may want some accountability on? And what I find is when you can kind of put all that in the room, one, it breaks down some barriers and leads to vulnerability. And I think vulnerability is a key attribute of a good leader. And so that's kind of the first question, is just to sit in that. The second kind of go together. So second two, what do you need to say yes to, or what do you want to say yes to? And what I'm looking for in there in that dialogue is, what are the things that you're getting energy from? What's driving you every day? And oftentimes those yeses and sometimes those successes will be similar and sometimes they're not. But that helps give me insight into what's giving this person energy. And usually I get a sense of their gifting and their wiring and that I can figure out how to best deploy that based on what's happening inside the organization. And counter to that is, what do you want to say no to? What are the things that are draining you? And I always caveat that with, you may not get to say no to it, but it helps me know, you know, what are the things that are kind of starting to fall into something you can do, but you don't necessarily love to do. When I understand what those are, then it helps me with capacity planning, because I can then say, all right, based on what I'm seeing and what's in front of us, we may need a hire, you know, 3 months from now or 6 months from now or 12 months from now. And it helps me start to shape that job description. So that's my yes and no. And then the next piece of the framework, so we've been building vulnerability through that, is to really ask two key questions that you're going to have to be a little bit more transparent around. What do you need from your team to be successful? So what are you not getting? So whether that's the team that you're sitting on or other teams interdepartmentally, if you're in a place where you can share that vulnerability and what's really working and what's really not working, it allows you to see the gaps that need to be fixed. And sometimes it's people, sometimes it's process, sometimes it's things that you can easily solve for, and sometimes it's not, but at least the dialogue is happening. And there you're giving the employee also a chance to be heard in some things that, you know, maybe they haven't had a chance to be heard on. And then the harder question right after, what do you need from your team, is what do you need from your leader? What do you need from me that you're not getting? And I can't tell you how helpful that's been for me as I've led over the years to understand where I need to pause, where I need to take feedback or give feedback or change a behavior. Sometimes that, you know, I don't think anything of, but maybe disruptive to my team. And so I really appreciate it when I can get clear, candid feedback from my team on exactly what they need from me. And so those questions are really designed to help you kind of get people stuck and unstuck, whether it's something stuck between teams or something stuck between you and a person. Sometimes other leaders inside the organization, that will come out there as well. And then finally, how do you want to grow? What's your career path? Where are you headed? When people feel seen and heard, then they will also tell you, like, this is where I'm at, but I'd really love to figure out how to get fill in the blank. And sometimes, in my experience, it's been places that are inside the company, and sometimes it's places out. And so one thing that I like to say here is, I know that you're with me for a season. You may be here for 30 days, 3 months, 3 years, 30 years. I don't know, and you don't know, but you are here for a time. And so what are the things that you want to learn that we can coach or teach you on as you are preparing for what could be next for you? And I have that dialogue regularly with my team, because I want to help them be, you know, who they want to be. And the way that that has played out for me is, when people resign, I usually get a pretty good heads up, like, hey, remember that thing we've been working towards? It's here. And I have this opportunity. And then, you know, we're able to plan what that exit looks like, if it's an exit, or what that transition looks like if it's something else inside the company. And then I also want to know, you know, how are they growing personally? Are there things that they want to learn that are outside of work? And is there anything I can do to help them with that? A connection I can make, an introduction. And so I think that's helped make me a vulnerable and transparent leader that's trusted by their team. And because of that, I feel like we're able to get a lot done together. I don't know, Leah, you've been on my team, so you could probably comment on that as well, if it's been helpful for you.
Oh, it definitely has. A concept that comes to mind for me is this idea that so many organizations and people struggle with having a scarcity mindset when they could be cultivating an abundance mindset. This might resonate with some of our listeners who work at a nonprofit because of just the ways that nonprofits operate. I think it can be tempting for people to see limited resources, limited budget, and limited time, and translate that scarcity into how they think and do their work. And so we can't overcome or ignore some of those limitations, but how can people begin to cultivate more of an abundance mindset and not just constantly live in scarcity, even when they're working within more limitations than perhaps someone at a for-profit company might?
That's a really great question. So there is a framework that we often use at Pursuant that kind of helps you get into that mindset of thinking and possibility, or a mindset of abundance. And it's meant to be a brainstorm session. And so often I will bring leaders or teams together to have that dialogue and ask questions like, if we could do anything, what is it that we should do over the next, you know, 5 years? You know, don't limit your thinking. You can dream as big as you want to. Pretend there's a crisis. Oh yeah, we just went through one. Pretend there's a pandemic and everything gets turned on its head. Who and how do we want to be known when we exit said crisis? And so I think it requires you to stare a little bit at what is business as usual. So how are things currently? Because we know what's going to happen there. Like if we keep doing what we're doing today, we're going to get the same results. But if we want to have that abundance mentality, we want to grow and solve the thing that we're charged to solve with, depending on what kind of organization we are or what kind of leader we are, you know, how do we start to map a way there? And so I like to, you know, ask that question, you know, what's the dream for 3 to 5 years out? And then think in possibility around what could be true. And some questions that you can ask to really unlock that sit with, you know, what are the headwinds that we're facing? So what are the blockers? What are the things that are in our way? And being able to capture that. And then also being able to capture the things, the tailwinds that we have or the things that are going really well that we could maximize or optimize to yield a different result. In addition, you got to get clear on, from a donor's perspective or even a buyer's perspective, you know, what are the things that our donors know about us? How do they see us? What's our unique value proposition in their eye? What's our case for support in their eyes? And does that actually translate to, you know, our goal? Hopefully it does. I, from a donor perspective, nonprofit perspective, also want to understand why are the donors giving to me? And I ask that question sometimes. I ask, why should they give? It's interesting. If you put both of those out in the room, you may get different answers. And that helps shine some light on areas of opportunity to think about as you're thinking about what that 3 to 5 year breakthrough result could be, or that new state, if you will. And so just spending some time with the team and unpacking what that looks like, and then having a unified goal or breakthrough outcome. This is okay. This is who we want to be. We want to grow by $100 million or $10 million, or we want to cure, fill in the blank. Like, what are those? What is that big thing? And then mapping yourself into, you know, what are the steps that need to happen in order for that to be true? What, you know, again, what's holding us back? And really unlocking what that thinking is, because it's all in there. And once you get it on the table, then you can start solving for it. There's another book. I'm going to continue to probably throw books out here, but they have shaped my life. Measure What Matters by John Doerr. It's on OKRs, objectives and key results. So once you understand what a big macro objective is, then how do you break that down into teams and leaders and ultimately individuals? So everybody can see the part that they play and own in that macro success. It's also an idea that's brought up in that book I mentioned earlier, Three Signs of a Miserable Job, by Patrick Lencioni. And he talks about like the importance of everybody on the team and knowing where I sit and where the person next to me sits and what their role is and the person on the other side of me sits. So you can actually have a framework for if I don't actually show up and do my part, it impacts the people around me is essentially the concept. And so I think having that abundance mentality, having that big ideation that we can all rally around, and then breaking that down into, you know, the key measurable next steps, both collectively as an organization, as a team, and then as individuals, is clarity. And then when you start working through that framework we started with in your individual one-on-ones, you now are able to help navigate when you're in those questions, you know, yes and no, what are you saying yes and no to? Or what do you need from your team in order for this to be true? You know what this is. Same thing for what do you need from the leader? Like, how can I show up for you? Because we know what that macro objective is. And so although it feels relational and it is transparent and a vulnerable conversation, it really is tied to the organizational goals. So I really appreciate that question. And I appreciate, you're right. I appreciate an abundance mentality. It allows you to dream a little bit bigger. And then once you've kind of put the OKRs to it, if you will, now you know how to measure that and then start to own that success. And the last thing that I'll add on there is it also, when you have that macro goal, you can then start asking yourself and your team, how do we need to show up as leaders in order for that to be true? And then unpacking, that helps unpack some of that gifting that we were talking about. You know, what gifts should I be bringing to the table in order to help this big thing be a true statement?
Let's acknowledge an elephant in the room. There's been this idea of the Great Resignation in the headlines for a couple of months now. People are leaving jobs, switching industries, or leaving work altogether. And the pandemic has accelerated changes that were already in process and caused people to maybe reevaluate how they want to spend their time and talents. So how can hiring managers at nonprofits who've probably had to cut staff members navigate this new competitive landscape for talent?
Oh, wow. Such a good question. I don't know that I have all the answers. I have a couple of ideas. I think it's important in today's culture, honestly, to understand, you know, what, if I'm in a situation, let me play it out a couple of different ways. If I'm in a situation where I'm interviewing, like just understanding what the key benefits are from that individual. So is remote work important? Is coming into an office important? Is flexibility and hours or PTO important? You know, understanding their salary needs, like all of those basic things are true. And then how can I position our organization as a place that stands out and cares for you as an individual and can help you achieve your personal goals? And so honestly, when I'm interviewing, I asked that question we talked about a few minutes ago, like, what's your dream? Like, I know that you're here for a season and you're going to want to learn something. So what is that? And then how do I help them understand that coming to work for me is going to help them not only have impact in solving whatever my nonprofit does, which has its own unique benefit to it, but also that they are going to have a chance to learn and grow inside the organization that will position them for, you know, what's to come. And then I would say internally, that framework that we walked through should actually unlock that dialogue with your existing employees. If you don't know what motivates them and what they care about and aren't having that conversation, then we probably should. Otherwise, they're probably the ones that are Googling and looking for a place where they can be seen and heard and known and feel like they're having impact and that they're being paid well and all the things that are important, whether it's benefits or there's a lot of things that can be important to an employee. And I think it is on an individual basis as to what stack ranks. So you should have an idea of the answer to that, at least for those that directly report to you. And then if they're managers, that they would know that about their team members. It doesn't mean that we can solve for all the things, but it does mean that at least the dialogue is happening. You'll kind of know, okay, this is where this person is. And these are the things that need to be true in order for this person to continue to stay and grow with us. So I think you can use those questions really on both sides of the table, if you're recruiting or if you're trying to retain.
One last question before we let you go. If you could go back in time and tell your younger self something about leadership, what would it be?
I really appreciate this question. And it wasn't until the last couple of years where I got super clear on it. I would go tell my younger self to believe in herself, that she is uniquely wired the way that she is wired. And she is unlike, you know, anyone else, because we are all unique individuals, and to not be afraid to let that gifting shine. And when I started doing that and really just owning, like knowing who I was, as I shared earlier, I've taken probably every personality test out there, but it made me more secure in how I was wired. I'll give you an example. And again, another book, sorry, but Strength Finders was really helpful for me. I'd done a bunch of the personality tests, but realizing I'm a strategic arranger are kind of my top two, and realizing how that skill set is unique and why I see the world in a certain way, different than others. It helped me do a couple of things. A, it helped me like own that strength. It also helped me figure out how to better communicate to people around me, because how I think is different than how other people think. And that's not a right or wrong thing, just is. And so just being able to show up and know how I'm wired and what those strengths are, and then owning that, I wish I'd been able to do that earlier in my career. So that would be some advice that I would hand out to my earlier self, is get clear on who you are and then own how you're wired and then start showing up that way.
I wish you could have given me that advice like 10 years ago.
Well, you have it now. So figure it out, get clear on it, and then do it. Because that's when you really start to come alive and can, you know, live the life that you were uniquely wired to do. And we have limited time. We don't know what that looks like on this, you know, planet. And I want, for me, for those that don't know, my motivator is the ripple effect. And so for me, I want to know that, you know, I made every minute, every second count towards, you know, making the world a better place. And I realize that sounds a little Pollyanna, but it's true, whether it's, you know, my kids or my friends in the neighborhood or the organizations that I get a chance to serve alongside. So I want to make those moments count. So getting clear on how you're wired and being able to show up in a meaningful way, I think is really important. And so to, you know, the men and women out there that don't know that, spend some time, do the work, because it will pay off in spades.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, we invite you to leave a rating and review, as that helps others discover the show.